Norman, we've got, well, I guess one quarter of the angry men here. You want to talk us up to this scene?
Sure. We have a little scene from about halfway through the play where the anger is heating up. And two of the men are dueling over their conflicting views, one, of course, on the side of guilt, and one pushing for at least consideration of innocence. And the two men here briefly go head to head.
It's my guess that the old man was trying to get to the door, heard someone racing down the stairs, and assumed it was the boy.
Assumed? Now listen to me, you people. I've seen all kinds of dishonesty in my day, but this little display takes the cake.
What dishonesty?
You come in here with your heart bleeding all over the floor about slum kids and injustice, and you make up these wild stories, and you've got some soft-hearted old ladies listening to you. Well, I'm not. I'm getting real sick of you. What's the matter with you people? This kid is guilty. He's got to burn. We're letting him slip through our fingers.
Our fingers? Are you his executioner?
I'm one of them.
Perhaps you'd like to pull the switch.
For this kid, you bet I'd like to pull the switch.
I'm sorry for you.
Don't start with me.
What it must feel like to want to pull the switch.
Shut up!
You're a sadist.
Shut up!
You want to see this boy die because you personally want it, not because of the facts. You're a beast. You disgust me.
Well, this play was originally written for a new medium called television. And it premiered in 1954 as a TV special and then was later done into a film in 1957 with Henry Fonda. And that's probably the one that people remember the most. Yeah. And then later it was adapted for the stage. Now, the three versions are slightly different, not necessarily in plot or conclusion, but just in the way they're shaped. This version that we're doing is really meant for the stage, and it's a heightened conflict and a little more opportunity to move around. From the film, it was 12 men seated at a table. On stage, that's not very interesting. So they give us some excuses to get up and move around, reenact the crime as they understand it, bring in some of the exhibits and evidence.
What are the advantages in this case of the stage production of 12 Angry Men from an artistic standpoint?
Well, the difference in film, and there were a lot of close-ups in the film, very tight shots on head and shoulders, but with this version for the stage, it's the whole body. You're aware of the men, you know, from top to bottom.
Yeah.
And as they move around and sort of like caged beasts locked in this jury room. And as the play begins, they're taking their first vote and finding out that they're not as unanimous as they thought when they were sitting in the courtroom.
Gosh, I just remember the tension. You could just feel it. How does that impact you all as actors?
I'd say one of the biggest challenges of this play is maintaining the tension and being able to maintain the audience's attention without there being any comic relief at all in the play that breaks up the action. And so I think with movement and with the aggression that you can see between the characters, that's how we're going to try to maintain that sense that at any moment things could go wrong even inside the jury room itself.
From that first moment on, Ken, as I recall, there is that feeling that almost like if you're in the room with a wild animal. I mean, literally anything could happen. That's got to be a pressure, a tension from you, from the actor's perspective.
It is. And from an actor's perspective, you're always on in this play. Very rarely, I think maybe for a couple seconds, maybe one or two characters leave the stage. But the 12 men are on there all the time. So somebody's always going to be looking at you. So that's very, very tense, knowing that someone in the audience is focusing in on you, and you got to keep it up. All 12 of us have to keep it up for nearly 2 hours.
I've never really thought about that before.
The actors, when they're not speaking, they're listening. Mm-hmm. And sometimes their listening is more telling as they begin to change their minds, change allegiances. And this play, too, is not on a straight line trajectory. A lot of the characters change their minds back and forth between guilt and innocence as we go along.
Mm, that's true. And how do you walk that from the director's chair? Nothing worse than sitting in the audience and seeing an overreaction in their facial expression, those subtle allusion to the gears are turning. How do you coax that out of somebody? Or how, as an actor, what do you draw on to walk that fine line? You know what I'm talking about? Toward the end, when it seems like every moment a bit of evidence turns in their mind and suddenly, you know, they're changing their verdict.
Obviously, the script, it's for certain people, leads them to those kind of epiphanies. Mm. But for other characters, as the actor, you have to find it. You have to find, oh, this part is where my character turns, or this my character buys this particular argument that's being made. So you if it's not written out for you in the script, you just have to find it.
Hmm. Talk about finding that that moment, Don, or that gesture.
Well, I think that the script and the story really ebbs and flows, and it goes in waves. And there are moments where the action and the tension really peak and crest, and then there are moments where it subsides and people take sort of a deep breath. And it's in those deep breaths where people begin to reevaluate their assumptions and try to figure out where exactly they stand on the spectrum of guilt or innocence in the case.
Okay. I kind of put the cart ahead of the horse. One of the great things about this play is just the variety of personalities involved. And you get to see, it's like a little micro lab. You get to see it played out in front of your very eyes and put it in the pressure cooker of a life-death situation, literally. Who are some of these personalities? Who are we dealing with in this courtroom?
The cast really runs the gamut in terms of a variation of age, a variation of size and build, a variation of education, of class, of wealth and poverty. They really are 12 very distinct men.
They're distinct men, and yet no names are used. Why is that?
Actually, the only thing that we have in our script is juror number 2, number 3, number 4, the foreman. You don't ever hear their names. In the film, actually, you heard a couple names in the very epilogue of the movie.
I really think of it as just a perfect vehicle for discussing issues of class and race and all these things, and the fact that there's no name in there, it did it for a reason. It's intriguing to me.
But if you've ever been on a jury, you don't really think about each other as having names. It's those ones who are saying he's guilty, those ones who are saying he's innocent. And that's kind of how you lump them. You don't lump them by name.
It keeps that focus, doesn't it? And that adds to the tension. I mean, it's all one. It's a very singular focus.
It also sort of reminds the viewer of the fact that this kind of thing happens every day. There are juries deliberating right now on serious issues and maybe not so serious issues. And I think by keeping the names anonymous, that sort of keeps you aware of the fact that this is a common thing, although this is sort of a heightened version of emotions. Mm. But it's something that's very real and happens all the time.
Doug, go ahead.
And I think that it's important to keep in mind that this is set in the 1950s and that a lot of what is going on inside the jury room is something that goes on in public life. I mean, and what happens in this story is that there are a lot of people who sort of go along with the majority because that's how they think they should go initially. And then over time, as they question their assumptions and they begin to question what the facts really are, they begin to change their mind and their way of thinking, and they develop the courage to be able to stand up in the face of someone who's attacking them and say their piece and be able to change their mind publicly.
Hmm.
If anything, I think that's one of the resounding themes in the play is determining what you actually believe in and then standing up for it with the full force of your convictions.
And you mentioned that the setting is something that you have to take into consideration as well. We're looking at the film came out in 1957. In this case, the accused just happens to be a Puerto Rican, a young Puerto Rican male. West Side Story came out, the play, in 1957. Puerto Rican gangs versus Catholic gangs. Fascinating time in our history and coming to grips with those. This becomes then the perfect vehicle for discussing these issues of race and class.
That's true. And I also think that the psychology of it, the way people argue, is relevant even today. I notice that sort of people, when they get in political debates, they kind of pick their own facts. And you see that a lot in this play, people sort of picking their own facts to support their preconceived notions. And some people are able to break away from that and come and look at things in an unbiased way. And other people, they have a harder time doing that.
But so many dramatic moments of that very example where people filter through their own life experiences there, and how can they not? Their view of this case. Give me another one, like an example.
Well, Ken raised a great point. Every one of these men comes into the room with their own baggage and their own filters, and they're trying to make sense of this as a group who otherwise have nothing in common with each other.
You see the best and worst sides of humanity.
It could have been written, I think, with very flat, one-dimensional characters. And I think what the remarkable thing about this script and this play is that as time goes on, you see wonderful nuances in all the characters. And I think that makes it a very, very rich story.
It does come back to our own personal prejudices, though. What are some of those that these guys are grappling with? Because they're kind of reflective of the time.
Well, they're grappling with stereotypes, especially because we have a young Hispanic male. So he's different. To some people, because he's different, he's vilified. To some people, because he's different, he's given more consideration. We also have an immigrant in the cast who is a German immigrant, but who identifies with some of those stereotypes and gets into battles over them. So it's very exciting, and I think the image of, you know, 12 caged animals trying to come to a common solution is pretty exciting, and you really don't know how it's going to turn out.
Are you resorting to any direct, you know, you sometimes hear about these directors that, like, they'll put their actors in a boot camp and keep them in a cabin for weeks together without shaving. any extremes there? How do you cultivate those animosities, the smell of the sweat in the room? You know what I'm talking about. Okay.
Well, they're just going to have to act.
They call it acting.
Yes.
Is that what it is?
And the 12 guys that we have, we had 54 men audition for this play.
Holy smokes.
And so we really had our pick. And a lot of choices in casting were not just talent and ability. It was physical type, age, how they look with each other. But these are really skilled performers.
Mm.
So we're spending our time getting into the text and what they're trying to bring to the table. And we're not really having any troubles with, you know, overacting or underplaying. People are just pretty much in the moment.
What's exceptional about this play from your experience? And you've directed many, many. And it stands out in my mind, but I'm not even quite sure why.
Well, number one, having an all-male cast adds a dynamic. There's a level of testosterone in the room and competition that you wouldn't have, especially in the 50s, if it were a mixed-sex group. So a little bit of the behavioral constraints of the 50s are off. Oddly, you know, I mean, language is clean. Again, this was written for the 50s when you couldn't say those seven words on television.
Thank you, George.
And it's really tension that is character-driven. And as these 12 men come to terms with their characters, then the conflict happens.
Yeah. I just love how they tick off the objections, you know, it's just kind of organic the way it happens, and it's very believable. And I use the glasses as an example because to notice the indentations on the nose of one of the witnesses that indicates that she wore glasses coming to play, it's just really well written.
Well, when I was saying earlier about how the play has peaks and valleys and waves, my character, Juror 8, is always looking for a way to reach each one of the jurors. One fact will make the difference for each one of them. And so there are all of these facts that get thrown out in opposition to 8's position on voting not guilty, and he has to find ways to deal with each one of them step by step by step. And to keep everybody at the table, to keep people engaged, and to prevent them from walking back into the courtroom and saying that they're a hung jury.
The fact that you all both have a legal background, you're both lawyers, that's got to play into your not only understanding of it, but does it help you? Does it hurt you? Do you overanalyze? How does that play into your approach to the script?
I really try to not be a lawyer when I'm playing the role that I'm playing. I think that it does help to have some context as to the way evidence would have come in and to understand a little bit about how a case is presented. But, of course, some of the things that happen inside this jury room would probably never happen inside of a real jury room.
What are some examples of things that would never happen?
Well, you certainly would never be able to sneak a knife into a jury room in real life.
And there is one juror who has a bit of racial prejudice within him. I don't know, maybe in the 50s you could have gotten away with it, but those kind of jurors would never, they would have been struck early in the voir dire process. They would never appear on a jury today, I don't think.
The defense would have written him off after a few questions.
One of the sides would have said no.
Yeah. It's very unusual. I mean, you mentioned that all-male cast, lots of testosterone to dodge, but any other particular challenges just given the nature of this play?
Just sharing, when they first come into the room, they're commenting on the heat. You know, they're boxed in a room. And actually, we're doing something on this set that we haven't done, at least in a long time, and that is putting a ceiling on the set so that they really are boxed in. And we've moved everything very far forward, so it's a very shallow set, and the audience is very close. The biggest challenge is just keeping them moving and making sure we keep the proper juror in focus, because you've got 12 people to look at. So we want to direct you so that you're looking in the right place at the right time to catch an important reaction.
Is that a lighting thing too?
It's a little bit of lighting. It's a little bit of staging. It's movement on the part of the actors. Sometimes if somebody's been speaking on one side of the stage and suddenly you're going to speak, you need to move slightly before you speak so that audience's eyes pivot over to you.
Hmm.
So little subtleties like that we're working on. But right now, each of the men is working on developing their characters.
And why this play, 12 Angry Men in 2013?
We're always looking for exciting drama. We do a lot of comedy. We do musicals. Dramas are hard to come by, especially dramas that are not depressing. We want to do dramas that are exciting, that are intense or emotional, but that you leave feeling good. And those kinds of dramas are hard to find. Also, as we were in the play reading committee for this season, we realized that this is a play that the Little Theater, Twin City Stage, has never done. For some reason in all our history, we've never done it. And a lot of our members, we've had subscribers that have been consistent since the mid-50s. And they remember all the plays that we've done. And so they don't like it when we repeat things too often. So we're always on the lookout for new things. So this was a drama, a new drama, and one that doesn't have a sad ending.